The economic disruption is real, but so is your ability to adjust your financial plan. From SDPB, today is Tuesday, April 7th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, financial therapist and wealth advisor Rick Kaler is with us. We'll look at the staggering impact of tariffs on everyday South Dakotans. An emotional response to uncertainty could derail even the best of financial plans. So we'll talk about how to adjust for the reality of unprecedented challenges. Then we preview a new program at South Dakota State University. It's a first-of-its-kind engineering degree with a focus on rethinking healthcare systems. We'll have that conversation later in the hour. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're In the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, the stock market took its worst tumble since the pandemic. If you're looking at the economy as a whole, or just at your 401k, you may be wondering how you should react. According to Rick Kaler, it might be smarter not to react. He's a wealth advisor and founder of the Kaler Financial Group. I spoke with him via Zoom.
I'm remodeling my bathroom, and this is hitting right in the middle, and a toilet made in Japan that was $328 a few days ago is now $328 is now $395. A water heater with a fella I work out with at the gym, his water heater went out, I think it was Tuesday. He called on Wednesday and was told, too bad you didn't call yesterday because they're up 22%. A.O. Smith, which are made in Mexico. And it just goes on and on. We are seeing the effects of these tariffs very, very quickly. And I think they'll probably be obvious to everybody within 30 days.
Let's talk about the internal reactions. Help us understand again what kind of internal reactions that many are having.
Oh, you know, a lot of different parts of ourselves, just a lot of fear. And what that means, there can be all sorts of stories that we individually can make up about what this means, to the extreme that I'm not going to be able to afford to eat. I'm not going to be able to take trips. I'm not going to be able to replace things that I need. I'm going to have to cut my lifestyle, and the panic that can sit in around that. I mean, it could be very true that, yep, I'm going to have to cut my lifestyle. But we can accept that as information, or we can accept that with, and I'm going to die type of energy.
When you say different parts, what do you mean? What are these parts in this internal family system that we've talked about before? There are parts that go way back that are showing up for us in different ways, and they're not always helpful, but they can be.
I more talk about parts that were in some way, parts of us that were some way wounded or traumatized as kids and never really had a chance to grow up. So they can be referencing back to childhood memories, childhood times that current events like this can trigger those times of trauma. I think we've talked about clients I've worked with that spent everything that they had because as a kid, their money disappeared. It could have disappeared because of a bankruptcy of the parents. It could have disappeared because the parents took it. I mean, these are all real life examples. And they, under panic, they go into spending mode. So that same person today, this could hit that trauma of years ago, like, my money's not going to be there.
Right.
Somebody's taking it. I had better spend it and get some utility out of it today because it's going to be gone.
So first we take a deep breath and we say the situation on the ground is real. We're talking to each other about them. We're seeing it show up in our real lives and we're feeling our feelings, which can be incredibly uncomfortable. Now is a good time to check in with all the work that you've done of those money beliefs and, you know, the things that you have a tendency to do when you start feeling a little panicked about money. Also, it's not too long ago, you know, during the pandemic, there was a lot of hoarding. You know, I want to go get the things that I'm going to need before the price jumps on them. Probably not too many people are going to buy extra water heaters, but they might buy extra other things. Stay calm, you say. There's not a shortage of toilet paper right now.
And we've had this thought, too, you know, in the middle of a project where we still have things we need. Maybe part of the difference is the prices have probably already jumped. We need to deal with that reality. I had one person saying they better go stock up. They love New Zealand lamb. They better go stock up on rack of lamb. Well, A, the price is very possibly has already gone up. B, even if it hasn't, how long do you want to risk keeping lamb? And what will the cost if one rack gets freezer burnt? It could wipe out the whole intent of what was just done. And what could happen to them just happened to us in our remodel. A electrician threw a breaker on our freezers and we didn't realize it for 3 days and lost everything in the freezer. One of my associates said today, yeah, freezers going out happens a lot more commonly than one would think. Mm. That's that panicked part of us that says, wow, what do I need? I better go get everything I need right now. And we get into the hoarding that can cause supply shortages, as we saw in the pandemic. But it also means that you still may be using toilet paper today that you bought 5 years ago. And to what point? I think the reality is settling in with prices are going up and prices have gone up. So how am I going to deal with that?
I love what you say here. This is a moment to shift into leadership.
And in an IFS mode, we'd be talking about self-leadership, mm-hmm. which is, you know, hearing and understanding the panic, the fear of all the parts of myself. It's not making those parts wrong. It's not trying to throw them out mm-hmm. of the system. But it's first a lot of compassion for the fear they're feeling. I mean, we are in some ways in unprecedented times, times that none of us have ever seen in our life. I have parts that are really scared. Mm-hmm. I have parts that are saying, you know what, maybe we better sell out some of what's in the market. And other parts saying, what happens if the rule of law is really thrown out by the leadership in our government? This changes everything. It changes everything with the stability of markets. It changes capitalism at its very roots, because capitalism at its roots must depend on the rule of law. Now, I have parts really concerned about that. How permanent are these changes? And there are no answers to this right now. So it's so important that when we make decisions, we make them from a non-triggered place, a place of calm, a place of serenity, which can be very difficult to get to. And it always is difficult to get to when we're triggered. But taking a time out of making any decision, I have a very reactive internal system. I go into action immediately on things, which some have said is my unique genius. And others have said, wow, that's the biggest weakness he has. So I'm more speaking do as I say than do as I do. But it's really important to get to that place of balance before making the decision. And for example, getting some cash right now might be a great decision, especially if you don't have an emergency reserve. Even selling some equities, if you're heavy, heavy, heavy on equities and have no emergency fund, might make sense even today. And if you can come to that from a place of rationality rather than, oh my God, the sky is falling, is the difference. That's the point I'm making.
Once I've calmed myself and I'm sort of looking at my plan, what kinds of decisions do we make about emergency funds and cash reserves, especially when we had another reasonable plan in place?
I think you hit it. You went right where my thought was, is if you have a plan in place right now today, I would encourage someone to continue with that plan. Mm-hmm. For example, interest rates are actually starting to fall a little bit. So yes, you can use a credit card. You could go borrow if you needed that, especially if you're paying off higher interest rate debt right now. Yeah. I think maybe one encouraging thing about the current situation is that it's possible it will resolve itself or leave as quickly as it came.
So going back to the curious watchfulness of your own financial spending on a day-to-day basis, I think is a really good, plus you feel like you have a little control if you're tracking your spending. Throw some of that control panic into just, you know, looking at those receipts, writing things down. I spent this much on food.
The estimates right now is that prices will raise just under 3%, or it will cost the average household about $3,800. Now that's up $2,100 from before April 2nd. Which is $73 per year, which is $73 a week. So the cost of living in total is not going to go up, say 25%, which maybe that's the average tariff. It'll go up something less than that. And like any times with inflation, and I think it'd be good if we just reframe this that we are having another spike in inflation. What did we do during the last spike inflation? Well, there's some things you didn't buy. To your point, big ticket items. I was looking for a new car, ironically. I started 2 weeks ago, and it's a foreign car. I decided, you know what? I only have 57,000 miles on my current car, even though it's 10 years old. This thing can go another 10 years. So maybe a good time just to pull back and see what happens. This is also not good for the economy. We're a consumer-driven economy. So when people stop spending, it exacerbates the problem, which is why so many people now are calling for a recession. And on a personal level, I'm not going to go ahead and spend 25% more for a car today when there's a reasonable chance 2 months from now, the price might have readjusted to help out the economy. I'm not that altruistic. Indeed, we may have a recession.
What about if you're set to retire this year?
I recommend to people retiring that they always have 2 years of spending in a reserve. We've talked about that in the past. So if a person has been planning on retiring, maybe they've already set that reserve up. Mm-hmm. It's still not too late. I mean, the markets are down. We just have entered a bear market today with the markets being down. The NASDAQ, the S&P, the Dow's close if it's not there, being down 20%. The average bear market sees a decline of 42%. So we have a lot further to go if this is the normal bear market. And so far, there's nothing normal about this whole situation. Mm-hmm. But to take some money out immediately, take a couple of years of spending out immediately, could make good sense. And then not touching the rest of what you have. Mm-hmm. Because if history is any indicator, things will recover. If history is any indicator, most bear markets are 9 months in duration. So it is, again, not to panic. Probably go ahead and retire. If a person hasn't put everything into motion, isn't necessarily hating life because of their job. I mean, we saw this in 2008, 2009. Yeah, you might decide, oh, I was going to put in for 6 months from now. I think I can hang around another year.
If I'm sending my child to college and I have a college fund and the market's tanking, I'm worried about losing. Do I take any action if my kid's supposed to go to college in the fall?
Yeah, probably if your kid's going to college in the fall, those funds needed to have been in almost cash anyway, because you really don't want to be subject to market volatility like we're seeing today when the kid is in or just about to go into college.
Okay.
So maybe you'd want to sell half of that and have 2 years of tuition if you're 100% in stocks. But if you've been in like a target fund, if you've been in some of these 529 plans that change the allocation the closer that the child gets to college, you're probably only 10 or 20% in the
Okay.
market anyway.
What if I'm going to buy a house? I was planning on buying a house this summer. Do I proceed with house buying at this point, or do I wait and
But
watch?
if you need a house, buy a house. If you're just thinking maybe I'll upgrade, that's a good one because mortgage rates have come down a little bit. And it's possible in a recession that we'll see house prices dip. Predicting house price, I don't know, Lori, were we talking back when the pandemic started and there was this certain financial planner that told people to wait, prices are going to fall on homes. If you want to buy, just stop. And he was so wrong. Typically, house prices, especially in South Dakota, don't follow the national trends as extremely. So our prices can kind of come down when other prices are crashing on the coasts and vice versa.
Okay, what if I'm a young person and I'm thinking about getting into the market? And now I look around and I'm like, my parents said this was part of being a, financially responsible adult was to start investing and saving for my future. But I'm reading the headlines every day and this doesn't look like a good plan at all.
Start. Stocks are 20% off from last week. I mean, this is the time. I was talking with one of my associates, and we have various clients that have said, we want to get more aggressive. And our advice has been wait until you see in the headlines there's a bear market, that markets are down 20%. That's the time to take your portfolio from being 60% in stocks to 70% in stocks. So the bell has rung. This is the time to do that. And let's go back to the parts of ourselves. And there's certainly a part that you described right now that's going, what is wrong with you? No way. Do you see how bad things are? This is terrifying. And that's why stocks go on sale. It's when things are bad. So it's overriding that into that young person. Absolutely. Start investing right now. Your timing is good. And put it into something like a global stock fund. There's many places you can get that. Vanguard is a great family, and you just don't want to buy the US. You want to buy international stocks as well. So, absolutely.
What if you just want to check out? Like, I just don't want anything to do with any of this. I want to not look at it, not think about it. It's just too stressful. The money avoiders. What's your advice for them at this point?
Checking out can have its advantages if that means you don't panic. So, during times like this, there can be a real advantage to being checked out. I mean, this goes back to the research that says the people that look at their portfolios once a year do better than those who look daily. I think this really underscores when we say that there's no one category, money avoider, money worshiper. money status or money vigilant that's good or bad. This is a time that was made for a money avoidant.
That's financial therapist Rick Kaler. He's the founder of the Kaler Financial Group in the Black Hills. Coming up, an upcoming program at South Dakota State University hopes to teach students out-of-the-box thinking. A panel of professors discuss how the answer to a rapidly changing healthcare world could be more engineers. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. A new program at South Dakota State University is offering engineers a place in hospitals and medical clinics. Students who complete the healthcare systems engineering program will have a Bachelor of Science engineering degree, and faculty members hope the out-of-the-box thinking needed to streamline America's ungainly healthcare system. I went to SDSU's campus to meet three of the leaders helping shape the new program. Greg Heiberger is an associate dean in the College of Natural Sciences. Yu-Chen Liu is the head of the Department of Mechanical Engineering. He's a Duane Sander Endowed Professor. And we're going to start with Sanjeev Kumar. He is dean of the Jerome J. Lohr College of Engineering. Again, we're talking about the Healthcare Systems Engineering Undergraduate Program at SDSU. The program begins in fall 2025.
Healthcare industry is the largest and the fastest growing industry in the world at this time. That was the motivation behind it, says, and the patient care is shifting from what we call practice to more precision. With the AI, data science, and everything, we have seen that the healthcare in the future will be very different. And healthcare system itself is very complicated, very large system, and we start looking into how we can educate students about the entire system. So being the SDSU faculty working in the area of healthcare, whether it's research, nursing, pharmacy, we thought there's a good synergy between all of us, and let's think about a different program.
And you don't necessarily have a national model, right? This is the first of its kind in the country.
This is the first of its kind.
And because of that, the rural nature of South Dakota is going to be just woven, versus if it was coming from Johns Hopkins or, you know, somewhere else where they might have a different geography, a different landscape. Dr. Heiberger, jump in here.
It's really leaning into the best of South Dakota, the best of South Dakota State University. And I think by doing it with a mission orient that, yes, it's about Sanford and Avera and Brookings Health and our regional partners and rural health, that those are going to be the focus areas when our students go out. We know we need to train South Dakota kids to stay in South Dakota. And so being the first in the nation is going to help us attract people from around the nation. It's going to help us keep kids here, keep South Dakota graduates in South Dakota, and I think that's a really exciting thing. So again, I think innovation is key to what we do. We need to be thinking ahead, and I have to applaud Dean Kumar and the university leadership for trying to think out ahead.
What are the other tracks besides pre-med?
So we have we offer five tracks. The first is general track, so the student can select courses from different categories, and we have AI data science track. The focus of that track is to give students skills in collecting healthcare data and do data analysis and promote data-driven patient care. The second track is controls and devices. So that focus of that track is to develop new medical equipment, tools, technologies to improve the overall quality and efficiency of patient care or healthcare. The third track is a pre-med. So we have a group of students who want to become doctors or physicians in the future. And come throughout this track, the student should be able to take the entrance exam of medical colleges. And the last track is animal track, animal industry. And our goal is to, can we translate, apply the set of skills, knowledge, information from the healthcare, and try to apply to the animal industry. So because of the five tracks, our program is a highly multidisciplinary program.
So you guys are thinking multidisciplinary, futuristic, innovative, outside the box. How do you get the students? What's in the curriculum so that they will think like this?
Engineering programs in general are known to to provide the skills to the students, which we call critical thinking and problem-solving skills. So in this situation, we are still providing those skills, but the students, the graduates, will have a lot more understanding about the healthcare and the whole healthcare system. So it kind of gets them ready to help the healthcare industry and the challenges of the healthcare industry. So when it comes to what kind of program, what kind of things they will be doing, improve the quality, efficiency, and overall patient care, design and develop medical technologies, devices, and tools to improve patient care, improve the healthcare system or its components, address healthcare disparities without direct patient care, so everything behind the scene rather than being the direct patient care, shape the future of the healthcare industry. These are the kind of things that the students who are coming to the program, if they have interest in any of those things, This program will be a great fit for them.
So who is the ideal student, the ideal cohort for 2025 fall? Who are you looking for? Paint a picture.
For the students who care about healthcare, who cares about patient care. So if the students want to develop their future careers in healthcare industry, if the students want to shape the future industry, those students are good for this program. Or if the students want to study medicine in the future, they are also good candidates for our program.
Yeah. Even a healthcare journalist would find a few things in here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Because sometimes those systems aren't working well.
Yep.
Yeah. And they need someone to come in and mm-hmm. rethink everything of how it works. Jump in, Greg.
I was just going to come back to the question about out-of-the-box thinking. You know, the traditional curriculum, whether that's at the undergraduate or graduate level, generally has core concepts and competencies that students learn in their first few years, and then they really move into an application phase. And without a doubt, these students, they're going to have skills that will be across biology, chemistry, engineering. But one of the key pieces is the systems conversation. And we haven't really talked about systems, but this idea of moving from acute problem solving, right? Here is an individual problem with a highly defined set of variables, to a really complicated system, is really one of the unique components of a systems engineering approach. And I think that this program has the right people, the right researchers, the right curriculum that will allow students to learn that in the classroom, right? They'll take some courses in systems engineering, understanding healthcare systems specifically, and then they're going to work with amazing faculty in their design experience and solve complicated problems. And so when we think about how do you get to out-of-the-box thinking, that's really what it is. You've got to have a foundation, but you've also have to have a place to apply it. And engineering, again, 100-plus year history of really great capstone experiences where students are solving real problems, and that's where it's going to happen.
I would say any student who has interest in math, science, and healthcare, right? But when you say healthcare, it's a healthcare industry, which is, again, we are talking about system, which involves everything that touches healthcare. So there are a lot of job opportunities or different type of jobs that we don't even know what kind of jobs will be coming in the future, because technology is reshaping the whole healthcare industry. So anyone who has interest in math, science, and healthcare and want to get critical thinking, problem-solving skills, this is for you.
So let's pretend that I'm a mother who's bringing my freshman on a tour, and my kid is really excited about this, and they're trying to get me to sign up and, you know, help them with the tuition. And I'm like, I'm not super excited about you preparing for a job that I don't understand what it means, and you can't really explain it to me because it's a job that maybe doesn't exist yet, and I'm about to make a big investment in your future. How are you going to help my student go from I'm interested in healthcare systems to, and the big thinking that I see with this kid and the great grades they've gotten, and I know they're going to be successful, but I want them to come out with a job. I want them to come out with something that they can immediately go to work, and now I'm getting concerned because it sounds lofty to me. Help bring it down to the mom and dad level.
Excellent question. So here's my take on it. Students who are in this program today, they are getting an engineering degree. They're still getting the same skills that the other engineers in different programs get. When the students graduate with an engineering degree, not all of them work in engineering field. They actually go in many different fields. Why is that? Because I say always that we wire students' brain to think critically and solve problems, so they can actually go in an industry. So even though we are preparing students for some futuristic industry also, but they can actually fit very well, they will fit very well into the jobs of today also, today's industry. So the, it's not that these students are getting ready for something in the future. Sure. Today's workforce needs, these students will be able to even take care of that, whether it's in healthcare industry or any other industry. Engineering degree, critical thinking, problem-solving skills.
That's a very good question, but I also want to add, because as we keep saying, this is a futuristic thinking program, and our goal is to prepare students for the future job, but another strong motivation is to prepare students to address existing challenges. So there are current challenges in healthcare industry. So that's, with that, there are enough number of job opportunities for today's students. If they don't want to create a new job, that's fine. Look at this area. We have so many large medical groups, Avera, Sanford, Mayo Clinics, a number of biomedical engineering companies, and those will be excellent employers for our students. Another thing is, as mentioned by Dr. Kumar, at least this is a system engineering degree, even we put healthcare there. So which means after completing this degree, students will have a system engineering approach to improve the overall quality of the industry. If they are not working in healthcare industry, they still can apply the skills, knowledge, and this view to other places. Okay, so the student can find a job from other engineering companies.
Now pretend that I'm a freshman coming in, and I'm very interested in a specific thing. Maybe I come from a dairy family, and we have bird flu in our herd, and I want to come up with innovative solutions for that. Or say I'm a diabetic student, and now I have all this information through my health app on my phone, but I know I can do something better, and I want the kind of education that's going to help me solve what I see as a specific problem in ag, in healthcare. Tell me a little bit about what you would say to that student. How are you going to help me navigate all the different options and narrow it down so I end up pointed in the direction to solve the problems back on the farm, for example?
The foundation is really important. So as a student, the thing you want to do is you want to get out there and you want to solve problems. We need to continue to build that foundational knowledge. And so that's going to be the first few years. But again, one of the benefits of the land grant, it's about being hands-on. It's about giving students real experiences where they're in labs, they're able to apply that. And so one of the benefits of a program like this that's multidisciplinary, they're going to be able to take biological chemistry, anatomy, but also agriculture-focused courses or other healthcare courses in addition to the engineering. And so one of the benefits of a program like this, and again, I think just a program generally at South Dakota State University in the sciences and engineering, is the ability to do undergraduate research, to work with amazing faculty, to do senior design projects. That's where that student's going to be able to build the app, to analyze the data about bird flu, to do those things that test the waters a little bit, that give them some investment and some output, but help them to navigate which area do I want to be in. And so I think it's, you know, higher ed is complex, 130 credits is complex, but one of the key pieces is you've got amazing faculty, amazing advisors, amazing mentors that can help each one of those students navigate a program like this to reach multiple endpoints, multiple end goals. And so a student who wants to do bird flu could find a way to go solve problems in that space. A student who wants to do something around diabetics can certainly find that solution in a program like this.
How close am I going to work with my professors and my researchers and my advisors at SDSU?
That's a very good question. So here is for the incoming student, new student, if the student does not know what he or she would like to do in the future, so my first recommendation is to take the general track. You just select courses from our menu. And for the first year, every student will be assigned a general advisor. This advisor will work with the students to select those foundational courses. And starting from the second year, the student will be assigned a faculty advisor. The faculty advisor is much familiar with our engineering curriculum. And this advisor will help students choose courses for the upcoming semesters and ensure that everyone is on the right track towards completion of their program. So because our minimum requirement end is 130 credits. So we want to help our students to save their money and time, right? So if they're not sure what they're going to do in the future, they can start from general track, and we ensure they can complete their program after completing 130 credits. But after years, if the students have developed some kind of specific interest in certain areas, he will work with advisors to choose courses that will match their career goals. And we have a very strong research program. So for example, in our department, we have about 60 graduate students. 3 years ago, when I joined the department, we only had 29 graduate students. So we are still growing. And besides the graduate students, we also have a group of undergraduate students who are very interested in research, and we are involving those students in our research programs. And they have a chance to directly work with professors on some research projects. For example, every year, each department will give 2 fellowships to 2 undergraduate students, and each student will receive a research stipend of $4,500 plus $500 support. In return, the student must attend a research team led by one of our professors. And by the end of the project, the student needs to submit a report summarizing their research activities and highlighting their outcomes. And also, for the healthcare engineering students, they also enjoy the same opportunity. They have a chance to work with our faculty, our professors, to develop novel healthcare equipment or system.
I'm going to jump in and give you a little bit overview of what we just talked about. The Lowell College of Engineering, we call Jerome J. Lowell College of Engineering, take pride in providing hands-on experience to our students. We do that multiple ways. One of the things that Dr. Liu just mentioned, it's at the college level, we started a program, it's called Future Innovators of America program. It's for the undergraduate students to do research along with faculty. They are not there to just help graduate students do the work. They have their own research project that they get. They get the stipend so that they don't have to go outside find the job. They can actually get some funds so that they can complete their research. So coming back to a student who want to study bird flu or develop app or something, here's what I would like to emphasize to that student. You will get there. But you need to. We also need to prepare the students for that kind of an outcome. That's why they have to go through some basic understanding of math, basic understanding of science, biology, especially when it comes to healthcare. We need to go out into anatomy, physiology. They have to have all that kind of understanding and then get into some engineering courses like circuits even to develop things, thermodynamics, just mechanics and things like that. So they have a full perspective of what is engineering and learn those skills. What Greg mentioned at the end was the capstone design. That's where everything comes together. The skills that you have learned, math, science skills that you have learned throughout your 2-3 years, because this is a capstone design project, it's a senior design project, and they actually put together if they want to develop the app, or we work with industry. So we get actually more than 50% of our project, they're sponsored by industry. So industry comes and tell us, we have this kind of a problem, we'd like your students to work on it. So that's how the students are getting hands-on experience and get ready for whatever they want to do.
Yeah. You can tell I'm a BA, right? Yeah. I have a BA brain. Capstone, you're making sense to me now, right? Go ahead, that's what you want to add something.
Talking about a capstone design project, a few years ago or last year, every year we have a few teams working on healthcare equipment development. For example, last year, one of our senior design teams developed an affordable prosthetics. 2 years ago, another team developed a wearable sensors that can be used for monitor people's health status. It is because of those projects we saw a strong potential in healthcare engineering program, because our students, a group of students, are really interested in patient care and healthcare. And there's one thing I want to add. So like we said, we only require 130 credits. So if you do not know what you're going to do in the future, you start from general track. But after a few years, if the students are interested in multiple tracks, we can help students to choose a minimum number of courses for the students to get the degrees what we want. So for example, if you can take more courses, you may have a degree in animal industry, or you can have a degree also in, let's say, AI and data science industry. So I just use my current students as an example. So our mechanical engineering students, so every year, about 70% of students graduate with one or two minor degrees, which means after completing the required minimum 130 credits, they want to spend more money, invest time and money to take a few more courses to get one or more minor degrees. Why is that? Because they see the value. And more than that, moreover, every year we have a group of students, 7 to 8, even more students, they choose to stay here one more year after graduation to get a master's degree due to the same reason, because they see the value of an advanced degree. So this is another thing I want to bring up. And moreover, so we open a lot of doors in this program. So after beyond a master's degree, if the students are really interested in research, they can continue with a PhD. After getting PhD, the students will have a chance to become a professor in the future or become a research scientist at a research agency.
Maybe this is just because I finished reading a Walter Isaacson biography of Einstein. However, some of these students come in with it also, I might be a musician, I might be a poet, I might be into theater, and that really feeds who I am as a potential engineer. Is there time for that?
The musicians make a great engineer, actually, because their brains work very differently. So engineering, anyone who has interest in just, again, developing critical thinking, problem-solving skills, they don't have to study or be engineer or work in the engineering field, but they can still use their skill, the engineering school skills, in any industry, even if they want to be a musician. They can use their engineering skill and do great things in their field of interest or field of passion.
If you look at some of the groups that are cross-cutting throughout the institution, so whether that's the forensics team that I think is at Nationals right now, they've got students in every one of the colleges, right? If you think about the Pride of the Dakotas, the student athletes, those skills in the arts, in the humanities, add a ton of value to the future of healthcare, the future of engineers, and so certainly SDSU is a great place that allows that and supports
reason,
that.
That's the reason, as Greg mentioned, engineers, they also have to do arts and humanities. Yep. It's not that they're only doing math sciences. They have to take courses in arts, humanities, social sciences, English, composition, all of those, because we want them to be holistic thinkers, not just the science and math.
Yeah. And for me, there are like nature ties between engineering and music. For example, I have two sons. They are pretty good at math and science, but they are also deeply involved in school bands. And to me, because I'm a mechanical engineering professor, music is all about vibrations and acoustics.
Yeah. Dean Kumar, how much, you know, when we look at SDSU as a whole, how does this fit into the R1 designation?
So R1 is highly focused on research. And again, what we are talking about, this degree program is what we call undergraduate degree program. You know, we talked a little bit about the research component that emphasizing on undergraduate research, allowing students to start thinking about research at even the undergraduate level. We think this will contribute to the R1 mission. But for R1 mission, we actually look into like how many students are graduated with PhD degrees, how much research funding that the university is bringing. So this program will contribute towards our R1 mission. But if you're talking about our strategic plan, which is called Pathway to Premier 2030, one of the components is transformative education also, providing state-of-the-art, futuristic thinking education. So this program fits very well into that category of our strategic plan also, where we are coming up with new program which we know that the future industry will be looking for these engineering. But I also want to emphasize that these individuals still will have the skills that's needed for today's industry. It's not that we are preparing them for something we don't know what's coming. They will be able to do the jobs of today, but they will be trained to innovate more for the jobs of the future. Yeah. These are the individuals who will create jobs of the future.
It's not science fiction, it's still science.
It is science, it's not fiction.
How closely are you working with the Sanford Avera Brookings Health System and Monument Health? What is their input on this?
Yes, so we already have multiple meetings with Sanford. We are meeting with Avera actually in a couple of weeks. We are already in discussion with them. We were at the Brookings Health System. And even beyond that, we have already talked to some biomedical devices type of companies also to get their feedback when we actually propose the program. So again, very new program. The challenge as you mentioned, for us, is to educate individuals, high school students, parents, what is this program all about? Yeah. But that's where I want to emphasize, it's an engineering degree. I'm very excited about the pre-med track that we have. Imagine the student, imagine the physicians who get the medical degree, but also have the engineering mindset, they will be, in my opinion, great physicians. We call engineered physicians.
Yeah. Let's imagine the future physician who has this kind of degree, Dr. Heiberger.
Well, I can kind of speak to the past. We have students that came through our pre-med, human biology, other majors over the last 10 or 15 years, and they're being tapped to be the coordinator of the AI implementation or the new software implementation or thinking about these things. And they're learning it on the fly, right? They're going back to school. They're taking other courses. They're doing that. I think this program has the opportunity that students, just as Dean Kumar said, as they go off to medical school, will have a skill set around systems thinking, around engineering, that will allow them to help to become those leaders of the future.
How does that help me be a better doctor?
Well,
how does that help me be a better nurse?
So you think about what's happened, whether it's nursing education, pharmacy education, medical education at the MDDO level, they've all moved to really the rhetoric being about holistic care. Right? And so certainly we need specialists. We need folks that can think very deeply about an acute condition. But so much of the training, interdisciplinary training, or of the research and the improvement around healthcare delivery has been about holistic care. And I think systems is about holistic, right? It's another way to think about the human body as a system, the human body as holistic. And so I think it's going to set students up to have a really strong framework that as they move to medical school, they already are thinking in a systems approach. And medical schools are moving their curriculum towards systems approach.
You talk about nurses and doctors. I just want to make sure the difference between healthcare system engineers and those doctors and nurses. Nurses and doctors are direct providers, patient care providers. So they talk to work with patient directly. But for our healthcare system engineers, they do the behind scenes work. They are supporters. So our goal is to improve the overall quality, efficiency, affordability, availability of patient care. So we are not a direct care providers, but we support nurses and doctors to provide a better, higher quality patient care to patients and customers.
Larry, you will see many of the best surgeons, they have engineering degrees also. Actually, you can look at even Mayo Clinic. There are several great physicians who have engineering degrees. I think, again, Greg mentioned about it's a different mindset, different thinking also when you're in the medical field. How are you going to be even improving that, the healthcare or the patient care? That having an engineering degree background, critical thinking, problem-solving skills will help you even provide a better care to the patient.
A little bit there about the upcoming healthcare systems engineering degree at SDSU. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.